The Sharp Tank. No jumper. Sharpest, coolest podcast in the world. Today I got my co-host, Jean-Paul. Y'all know him from A Day in L.A.
Top
of
top.
And we got the legendary, the one and only exhibit in the building.
Yeah, what's up, family?
How you feeling, man?
Good, man.
How you feeling, man? I'm happy to have you in the building, man. It's a pleasure and it's an honor, man.
Yeah, thank you, man. Appreciate it.
How's everything been, man? How was the ride over here? I always like to start off.
It's easy. Easy.
You don't fuck with your mental health or nothing on the
No.
Because it's traffic.
My studio lot not far from here.
Okay.
So yeah, it's an easy, you know, couple freeways and I'm here. Yeah, easy. So yeah, man, I'm glad to be here with y'all today.
I'm glad to have you here,
yeah,
man.
Come on now.
We want to do like a little icebreaker with you, man.
We want to
see what's your top five West Coast rappers of all time.
All time.
Well, first of all, I want to say I've never met anyone that sounds close to me.
Yeah.
What's your voice?
It's the voice.
I like that crack so much, bro.
No, cool.
Hey, I let it be.
I was like, God.
You thought it was fake?
His voice sounded like a black and mild, like my shit.
Like a motherfucker. For real.
But see, I've had this like voice since I was a kid.
Me too.
You know what I'm saying?
Me too.
So it just worked. I mean, I'm pretty sure the years of rolling up has enhanced it a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But
mm-hmm.
It's all right. So let's talk about it. Top five rappers of all time.
West Coast. Rappers. No
West
particular
Coast.
Order.
West Coast rappers.
Yeah.
Top five. Yeah.
West Coast rappers.
Yeah.
I'm going to go with Crooked Eye.
Okay.
Razzcass. Snoop Dogg.
Sure.
Ice Cube.
Sure.
E-40.
I had top five. And he didn't put himself in there like most rappers do.
Like most rappers. They
were like, me, of course. So
yeah. I mean, look, dude, it's okay to be a fan.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people, a lot of people nowadays walk up and be like, you know, I'm not being a fanboy or nothing. Like, my nigga, it's cool. You know what I'm saying? Thank you for appreciating. You're not less than anyone because you enjoy somebody's music or art.
Right.
That's what it's built for. That's what it's supposed to do. So, you know, I don't mind being a fan of the people, especially my peers. You know, I love being able to listen to them, enjoy the art, enjoy the perspective. But I'm a lyricist. Mm. So, you know what I'm saying? There's people that make, you know, millions and millions and, you know, records sold and all that. But I like somebody that can sit down with a pen and take us somewhere.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? So that's what I base my shit on.
You notice, I'll be honest with you, you are right about that because it's like nobody tells a story within their music no more. Like nobody paints a picture.
Mm-hmm.
Well, everything.
They do
I'm
paint
not saying,
a picture.
They do,
not
but
from start to finish, like today was a good day type of vibe.
Yeah.
Once like, upon a time in the projects or something like that
right.
Where it's like narrative.
Right.
I feel like we don't really get those type
I
of
think,
records
I think
start to finish.
They are painting pictures because the music is connecting in a different way. But they are painting pictures, but it's the same picture.
Over and over and
you
over.
You know what I'm saying? Over and over and over again.
Okay.
I mean, some pictures are more expensive than others. But it's
right.
Pretty much the same
right.
Script.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Real shit. No, for real, bro.
Yeah.
For real.
Yeah.
That's wild right there. When you start smoking weed, when was the first time you started smoking?
The first time I started smoking, I was in high school. So, you know, a friend of mine has some, remember the compressed, packed in Mexican weed? You know what I'm saying?
With all like, the seeds.
All the seeds, yeah.
I don't know. It might be before your
that
time.
That might be before my time.
Yeah, yeah, you spoiled.
I'm
you know what I'm saying?
Spoiled.
Yeah,
yeah. Spoiled.
It was by packs. All we had designs on it.
Yeah, exactly, right?
I got that one, though.
We also used to play outside, so go figure.
Oh, shit.
Nobody does anything. That no more, man.
Nowhere.
I don't see kids outside playing on the block like
there's too many weirdos.
Yeah.
It's too dangerous.
Yeah.
You know, and whether we have boxed ourselves into this corner by, watching what's happening on the news and freaking ourselves out on the internet and, you know, pandemics and this and all this other shit.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
It's like, hard to let them get
hard
toe
to
out
it's
the door.
Yeah, you got to keep a track on where your kids are at all times. But when I was a kid, they used to like kick us out the house and you couldn't come in the house until the lights came on.
And if your ass did, you were staying in.
Yeah. You come in, you staying in.
Straight up.
Yeah, drinking water out the hose. Like, we're tough. You know what I'm saying? We're tough. It's got peanut allergies and all kinds of shit now. It's like, nigga.
real.
Go outside and get cut, nigga. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like, fall down. Toughen up your motherfucking immune system. These, you know what I'm saying? What the f-?
That's crazy.
Hey, no, real shit, yeah, man. Yeah. So you started smoking weed in high school.
In high school. And then, you know, from there, you know, it became an integral part of everything I did. It was like when I did music, I became a musician. It was already there. Is that music and marijuana go hand in hand. So you know, fast forward, I've, you know, been in the cannabis industry for 10 some years, 10 yeah. plus years. And you know, this is my second brand, and so I got a lot of experience from that. And so that's why I wanted to do the Lasagna Ganja podcast. Okay. With the podcast, it's kind of like my experience. I got a co-host, the Cannabis Cutie. And what we do is we talk about all the, because cannabis is such an unknown, known business, right? There's a lot of people that want to get in. There's a lot of people that want to, you know, have their own strain, have their own, you know what I'm saying? There's a black market. There's traditional brands that have been there for a long time. Then there's new brands coming out. You know, so we get a pulse on everything. That's why we call it the Lasagna Ganja, because it's layers to what is going on. All
right, well, if there's layers, right, to Lasagna Ganja, let's walk back from the, you know what I'm saying, the Mecki weed. You know what I'm saying? That's what they call it. With the seeds and the sticks and the stems, then what happened?
They call it stress.
Then what came next? Pretendo.
Yeah, Pretendo. No, what came next was the Chronic.
The Chronic.
Pretendo? What's Pretendo?
It was just a light, it was a really good light green.
It's called mids.
Healthy stress.
Oh, okay. It was mids.
It was still stress weed, but it was healthy. It was actually green.
Healthy stress weed.
No, it was mids.
Okay.
It was like niggas was trying to get there.
Okay.
Yeah, and then somebody came along with a real one. It was like, okay, here go the Chronic.
Yeah, the Chronic was definitely, that funk beta. Was that truth back then, man? The real Chronic, original Crons, man.
Never got to smoke it.
Well, the introduction of the Chronic comes from actually a guy named Josh D. He was the guy who made the original cut and brought it from Florida.
Okay.
When he got the actual cut, that made the genetics that made the Chronic. Okay. It was Kush, right? So Kush came here from Josh D. Josh D gave it to a few people, only a few people. There's Kenji with Soul Assassin, Be Real, and all them. Mm-hmm. He was the first one with it. Mm-hmm. And then this guy named Brett, the guy who does Wonder Brett now. And then there was a couple other folks that had it, but I know those two had it in the city first. Okay. And then from there, it just became like, okay, we got to start growing. And then it became like the thing. So everybody got spoiled on this new cut, and it became like the biggest shit ever. Now everything that's cut from that original cut, that original genetics, is what you have now. It's been spliced with other things and other genetics over the years.
Yeah.
But to find that original cut, it's hard to do now.
He said, bro, we're going searching for
but
that.
There's still the originals. The originals, the originals is a group that still grows OG. That's all they grow, and they have the original cut too. So those guys, if you want to find OG, the originals have it. I'm pretty sure Be Real has some secret magic stash somewhere around there somewhere.
Yeah.
And Kenji still knows how to do it, but that's how the Chronic became such a big deal. And then from there, everything exploded.
Well, let's think about it, right? Even from the Chronic, when Hardball Granddaddy Purple hit the scene, it was over.
Yeah, yeah.
That shit mutated into something crazy.
Yeah.
Could I ask for a time frame? When did Chronic come into the picture, and then when did Granddaddy
early
Purple
2000s,
come
maybe late 90s, oh, early before, 2000s?
Yeah, mid-90s.
Mid-90s.
That's when it landed, and then it just started growing. It may be before that, but what I'm saying, it became what it was, where, you know, people started referring it to it by that name, the Chronic.
Right.
Especially with the help of Dr. Dre's release, it became like labeled. This is what it
you
is.
Ever smoked, you know, Thai sticks?
I did. I can't stand them. I didn't like them.
Thai sticks?
The shit like with a string
bud.
Around it?
Yeah, it was Thai bud.
It was like this shit.
A blunt with string.
Yeah, and Thai sticks. It was like a certain weed. It was like kind of. It was like somebody made a paste and then put it around this fucking stick,
like sausage,
and then wrapped some string around it. It was like the weed version of smoking a beedie. You know what I mean?
Right.
Remember beedies?
I remember beedies.
Them lung busters.
Them lung busters.
Ugh.
Man, I used to have a couple like Jamaican homies who smoked them. It's the beaties.
Razzcats used to smoke like they was going out of style. I was like, I opened one up. It's like little squares of shit. It's like, I ain't smoking this.
Okay. Shout out to Razzcats. He's from Carson.
Yeah, right? Carson. Yeah. Carson in the building. Yeah.
All right. So speaking of.
Because I want to, you know what I'm saying? I want to really know what's going on with Lasagna Ganja and like, what's the plan for it? Like, what even made you even want to start?
I want to know where the name came from.
Yeah.
Of course. I came up with the name. Okay. Because, again, Lasagna Ganja, there's so many layers to the cannabis industry. Mm. So that's why you start. There's no food involved. You know what I'm saying?
You got me.
No food involved. Although we thinking about it. But
he said you got me.
Yeah.
No food. And you over. I'm playing.
I love when a big person can take a fat joke. Like, I got you. Get it out your way. Get it out the way. I know what's coming.
So, yeah, man. You know, so that's why I came up with the name. I wanted to do it because there's a lot of misinformation out there about cannabis, period. There's a lot of things that are happening within cannabis that, you know, let's face it, people of color, people that look like us don't get involved in. Mm-hmm. So I am one of the few owners, operators in cannabis of my descent, right? And so there's Al Harrington, there's a few other people. It is becoming nationalized. It's like we're getting left out. You know what I'm saying? So I feel like the information that's out there and the talent that we have as a culture is very much needed. But you don't hear about these things. They're not advertised. They're not put in the paper. You can't go to LinkedIn and find these positions. Because being a cannabis owner, having your enough capital to go out there and put that money out there towards that is I feel like that train has left the station because it's so much that has happened.
You feel like it was done on purpose?
Absolutely.
Them legalizing the weed, like, because it f***ed up the modern day bag boy. You know what I'm saying?
No, not in a sense. No, not really, because as long as the taxation and the way that it is regulated is in place, black market's always going to win. Why would you pay for something that you're getting paid, you have to pay an extra 33% of taxation when the homeboy got it in the Ziploc? You know what I'm saying? Yeah. He's happy, you're happy, everybody's
that didn't
happy.
Come from here, by the way.
No. By the way. I brought this.
Yeah, I don't know where he got that from. We do not sell cannabis whatsoever. So I just wanted to make sure what's going on.
You did launch a cannabis brand named Napalm.
Yes, right? I did. Before that, it was Brass Knuckles.
Okay.
Once I did Brass Knuckles, we were like the first vape market, the first vape on the market that was as tremendously known and circulated as it was at the time we were the first. Okay. So I had business partners in that, ended up moving on from that, and then Napalm was my second step into it. Okay. And so now as things expand, you know, I have my first dispensary opening. It's called Exhibits West Coast Cannabis.
Fire.
It's in Bel Air. First one in that area. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm not even gonna say like, you know, we gonna go down, we gonna hit the streets.
Everything is about location, yeah. Right? True. So the location that we have is really dope, and I feel like that's the next step into my cannabis work. You know what I'm saying? It's like being able to not only understand the marketing and branding side of it, but step into the retail side.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's up. Congratulations on that.
Thank you, man. Come on, bro.
We know niggas buy weed. Them people up there at church, they gonna be like, man, you got some edibles.
Yes. And the answer is yes.
Yeah, which I'm sure you would have some edibles. When you guys plan on opening?
Well, right now, we're trying to do it before the end of the year, but if not, it'll be open up next year.
Okay.
Yeah, early.
Bel Air, huh?
Yeah.
I did not expect you to say that.
Yeah.
I thought you were going to say, you know, down to L.A., man, we're going to open one up.
Yeah, like, well, it's oversaturated. Like I said, location.
Right.
Well, he come out with something exclusive.
Yeah, no, it's really nice, man. And I can't wait to bring what I feel is missing from the retail experiences that I've had and make my store something different. You know what I'm saying? And I think that has some really dope ideas of the way that we have it set and the way we present it because, you know, cannabis is nothing like alcohol. And it's nothing like clothing. It's nothing like music. You know what I'm saying? Like the traditional things you've seen celebrity artists get into.
What made you want to get this into this space? Was it because you had the love for weed and you said, "And I want to really, you know, bring some culture to it and let them know like that weed's a part of the culture. It's not a drug. It's not like for drug use, like people popping pills or sipping syrup or, you know what I'm saying, other things, other vices like that."
You hit it right on the head because it is a culture.
Yeah.
Everything we do is culture.
Yeah.
The way we dress, the way we communicate through music, the way all these things are culture based.
Okay.
And it's not trendy because trends come and go. Culture is something that is sustainable and that goes through generations, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the West Coast especially, like there is a culture out here that is beyond what people can change. You can dress it up different. You can do all that stuff, but it is a culture. It's the same way, same rules apply.
West Coast,
right?
West Coast.
You know, West Coast gang rules, baby. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
So what made me want to get into cannabis, it was a natural thing that I understood everything about, and I could do it in my sleep, and it's something I love. I found that if I do something I love, I never work a day in my life. And so I love making music. I love doing film and TV. I love cannabis. You know what I'm saying? So I go into things that I understand because now I know how to do it. I know how to build a business now, and now I just know how to apply these things to the actual genres I love.
You know how to maximize these areas.
Absolutely. And once you understand how to build a business and run a business the right way, then being able to get good people around you, which is the hard part.
I'm sure.
Yeah. Anything you do, finding good people is the hardest thing to do because not everybody wants it as bad as you do. Nobody sees it the same way you do. And everybody has an agenda. It just depends on how, you know, is the agenda that they have more damaging or is it going to be manageable?
Well, let's break it down, right? I don't think it's about finding good people. It's about finding loyal people. Because even if a person might be mad that day, you need their loyalty to override their good or how they feel. You know what I'm saying? Loyalty in the mixture and everybody having the same goal is very important to
me. That's an aspect of it. But me personally, I'd rather take somebody that's skillful, that's good at what they do, over a person that's like kind and loyal. Like me personally. I take the person that's good at what they do and pay you for your service, and that's that versus this loyalty, but you might not be that good at what you do. You know what I'm saying? That's just how I see that.
You talking about hiring the homeboys.
That's exactly what I'm talking about.
Which doesn't cut it.
It doesn't cut it.
You're loyal to me, but you're not good at this, bro. So
there's something to that. And not to cut you off, but in my experience, I've done that before. I've brought unqualified people forward with me.
That's the perfect word.
And it's cost me more than just the business. There's cost me friendships. It's cost me family members. There's entitlement issues. There's all this that happens because unqualified people that don't understand it or understand big pictures come forward with you. You can't take niggas with you like Harriet Tubman. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
But I feel like sometimes loyalty, you can build them to be great at the job, you know what I'm saying? As long as they want to stay consistent, that's why I would take loyalty. Because I'm like, anybody can learn.
Right. But then that learning curve is also going to cost you, cost you time and energy and margin.
That's a good guy.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So what I've found is that you do find qualified people.
Okay.
And you bring those people in and you keep the friendship and the business separate.
Okay. Mm.
You keep it separate because, you know, you have to be knowing that the importance is the business. And you got to be willing to fire the weak link. You know what I'm saying?
And not let it be because of the relationship.
The relationship is there why you keep them.
Yeah.
And you suffer in the end. So, you know, there's people that do come in that have been friends.
Okay.
And, you know what I'm saying? But usually, you know, the people that have issues with me now and all that stuff, I used to take care of them. So, you know what I'm saying? It feels about a bitch.
Yeah. That's how it always goes, right?
Yeah, nine times out of ten.
You've been fed or took care of.
Yeah, like I was listening to a podcast the other day where this detective guy was on there. He's like, all the years that I've been working in homicide, you know, people that, 9 times out of 10, the people that kill you are the people that say they used to love you. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and there's a lot of shit that happens in business that can be forgiven but not forgotten.
So you've had something like that happen, like bringing in family members and...
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's trial and error. Even from you know, when I started music, you know, everybody wants that mentality of, like, I want to bring everybody with me. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Like, when I get on, nigga, it's going to be us. Nigga, we... Yeah, everybody high-fiving. Nigga, we good. Yeah, nigga. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Yeah, nigga, mm-hmm. You know, let's go. We about to do this.
That
you know
what I'm saying? Always
we always So what you going to do? You know what I'm saying? Yeah, like my nigga, and everybody wants to step into that leadership role. But in order for things to work, it can't just be words, it has to be actions. You know what I'm saying? So actions are the actions are bigger than words, you know, and they mean more, right? So that's where my feeling has happened, where it got to that point. So that's how, you know, I've run everything now.
Yourself, like, okay.
Yeah.
How did, let me ask you this, speaking of, let's talk about good people. Mm-hmm. How did you come across Cannabis Cutie, Miss T?
Oh, man, Tammy has her own platform.
Okay.
Right, the Cannabis Cutie is
I saw that.
Yeah, she empowers platform. Women. She's really into, you know, cannabis knowledge. She has, you know what I'm saying? It's like, she's very educated.
That's why she didn't come today.
You know,
I'm anti on.
Education.
Shout out Tammy.
Baby, we wanted you here today. Yeah, I don't know what happened, but she was supposed to actually be here today.
Yeah,
but
yeah, yeah.
All good.
Yeah, it's yeah. She love. Thought Crit Mac was going to be here.
Crit Mac is not here today. We got the email. Crit Mac is not in today.
Shout out Crit Mac, man. We love you, G. 55th Street.
Oh, yeah.
So, for the podcast, like, what type of people are you guys interviewing, like,
guest wise,
we talk to everybody. Like, our goal is to get this from your street to Wall Street and educate everybody in between, right? So we talk to people who grow the plant, people who sell the plant, people who lawmakers, you know, people who do regulations for the plant, you know, people who own retail, people who do cultivation across small lights, mini lights, you know, people, multi-state operators. There's so many people that are involved in this thing that still hasn't been federally legalized yet. So, you know, we pick people that are interesting, but we also want people to know, like, these are the things that you should be paying attention to.
If I'm mistaken, please correct me. So y'all kind of like the storm chasers of cannabis.
Storm
like
chasers?
Y'all try to get down to the bottom of the, you know what I'm saying, like to the root of things, like, and try to go, y'all chase certain things in the cannabis industry. Yeah, pretty much.
Absolutely.
Of the cannabis industry, you know what I'm saying, and what's going on, because like you said, there's some shit that's not regulated yet, legalized, some people are having problems, troubles, definitely want to come on and talk about it in the cannabis space.
Correct. There's like, we consider ourselves like the Joe Rogan Dateline combination of cannabis.
Because it's like down to the bottom line. Y'all are trying to chase the bottom line of this.
And cut through the misinformation.
Right.
About cannabis.
That is what it is, because there's a lot of people that are now warming up to it. A lot of elderly people are now coming back to discovering, you know, the devil's lettuce. You know what I'm saying? There's no longer the mentality. So now it's more of, okay, let's educate people so that, you know, because we know misinformation gets shot out and people run to it and digest it, and it's dangerous.
Yeah.
So, you know, we also can't let this thing, you know, be changed, let people change the narrative about what this thing is. And because right now it is really hard to run a cannabis business in California. It's really hard. It's overtaxed. It is overregulated. You know, like I said, there's, at the end of the day, out of every dollar that comes out, 33 and plus, so maybe 33 plus is taken out by taxes.
I mean, he's right, because you go into the store to buy an eighth, you're talking $70 for a top shelf. You know what I'm saying? Because $30 of that, $29 of that is going to go towards taxes period. I'm like, $30 taxes on something?
But that's why people buy on the black market, like you were saying.
Correct.
It makes sense why you corrected me earlier. You was like, no, the black market's always going to thrive because they're putting too much tax on that
shit. Right, right. But here's the flip side of that coin.
Yeah.
It's not just flour that's being sold. You know, when you buy a regulated legal eighth, you can it's tested. There's no pesticides. There's no prop. There's nothing. It has to pass a vigorous test before it's put on the shelf. Now, when you buy from the black market, good luck. Good luck, because they put
good luck.
It's some people that, you know, spray shit on their weed to make it smell a certain way.
Yeah.
There's some people that put bullshit in the carts. You don't know what you're smoking. There's pesticides problems. People taking shortcuts. You putting something in your body,
okay.
Right? So just because it's cheaper, don't mean, you know what I'm saying, like, it's good. You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah, you can have some Top Ramen once in a while, but nigga, you gonna live off Top Ramen? You know what I'm saying?
It's cheap.
You can get a gang of it.
Yeah.
But you know what I'm saying? Like, you don't know what people are doing in that process. And as we go forward, you know, you want to know what you're putting in your body. So buying a legal way is the way to go. But until they fix the regulation, like I said, people are always going to take the chance.
Yeah. We talk about your upbringing a little bit, man.
Absolutely.
You know what I'm saying? I believe you was from Detroit originally.
I was
born in Detroit.
Oh, there you go. What side?
I was born in Henry Ford Hospital.
Okay. Yeah, all right, cool. I was on the east side, Seven Mile in Healy.
Yeah, man. My people, man, 7 Mile, Pinehurst, 6 Mile, Telegraph. And I had people stay on Cherry Lawn, Green Lawn.
Yeah.
All that shit, man. Yosemite.
Yeah, oh, come on right there.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah, so all my people, all that
okay,
shit.
Oh, okay, hell yeah. Okay, what up, though?
This the hood.
What up, though?
We in tune, though. For sure.
No, but I left when I was 9, so there's that.
Oh, just early childhood.
Yeah. But my family's still there. I still got family in Hamtramck. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. That's live.
Yeah.
That's live right there, man.
So, when I left there, I lived in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Then from Albuquerque, New Mexico, I came to California.
No wonder, like, you be sounding agitated in some of your rhymes. Nigga, you lived in a hot-ass place, and ain't to do out in that
It's
real.
A desert.
That was the desert for real, man.
But I feel blessed because I've been able to live all across the country, and I've been able to meet a lot of different, you know, have a different impact from different cultures.
Yeah.
Right. And, you know, I spent like 7-8 years in New Mexico and learned a lot, you know, coming from Detroit, New Mexico. Right. The culture shock a little bit.
I bet.
Desert, nigga.
Because it's
just came
Detroit,
from trees.
Right?
Like, yeah, just came from trees and green grass and shit. Come out here, nigga, straight desert.
Yeah. But I've still got a lot of friends and family there. And then coming into California, it was like I was well-rounded. I became a man in California.
Yeah.
I was like 17, 18 years old. My children were born here. Okay. You know, I grew up, you know, like with, you know, purpose here. I found my way here. You know what I'm saying? Like,
understandable.
Were
my
you
career.
Shocked by gang culture and just LA culture?
No,
Ohio,
no. It was
shit was going on.
It was going on over
there.
Detroit,
for sure.
Yeah. When I got to New Mexico, before I left, it was like people that was coming out from California out there.
Oh, okay.
You know what I'm saying? Setting up shop, getting work, you know what I'm saying?
Okay.
And that's how the connection was happening. You know what I'm saying? It was niggas with Jerry curls and shit. It was Crips coming out there to New Mexico, like, hey, what y'all for? You definitely not from here.
So listening to a lot of West Coast gangster rap already at that time, it was already big out there.
Absolutely. Come on, yeah, it was in full swing. Niggas ain't the 1800s. How old do you think I am?
Hey, bro. I'm just asking. I know y'all didn't have internet and social media.
Nigga.
You're not like that.
Internet was almost here, nigga.
Yeah. So I'm just asking what the music spread was y'all bumping at.
He said was gangster rap going.
Hey, man.
Oh, man. God damn, G.
I know that gangster rap was going. I'm asking, was y'all listening to that in Albuquerque?
Yes, nigga. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. My fault.
No, that was great.
We had cell phones and everything.
I wouldn't call them cell phones.
Yeah,
but.
Them motherfuckers was bricks back then. Though.
The Motorola
my
bricks.
Uncle had that big ass brick. I ain't gonna lie, that motherfucker was like a house phone.
Ah, shit.
That motherfucker was like a military phone, nigga, for real. Yeah.
So you come to LA. How did you link up with King T from Compton?
Oh yeah, dude. Well, first,
legendary King T.
Before I met King T, I met a gentleman named Top. Top was a guy that wanted to be like a music manager.
Okay.
He had, you know, like Volume 10, a couple other folks, and so Oh, Ganja K, rest in peace. And he had this guy introduce me to named James Broadway. James Broadway was a producer from this production crew called 360. And from there, Broadway was producing King T.
Okay.
And so that was the first time I had been in the studio in that kind of capacity. And it was dope to be able to come around because I used to just freestyle. Yeah. I was coming from battle rapping. Okay. So I just had a gang of bars. They weren't chopped up or none. I go like 20 minutes. You know what I'm saying? No structure, no nothing. Just rattling words. You know what I'm saying? So in that environment, I got to be able to learn how to like structure songs, write hooks, bars, bridges, you know, and that's where it came from. He was the first signed artist that I met. And then I met the Alcoholics. Then after I groomed a little bit, then he was like, yo, man, I think you got it, kid. He put me on the record, put me on the song.
Yeah.
And they were the ones that kind of gave me my first light, you know? Right.
What was your first impression of the Alcoholics when you met them?
I was like, man, this is it. These niggas are Superman. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Like because Make Room was huge. You know, so only when I'm drunk. Okay. You know, King T has such a legacy already.
Yep.
He's already a staple, you know? So these guys were really like popping, you know what I'm saying? And I was just learning a lot from them. I learned everything from them, you know? And then how to be an artist, right? And then, you know, when I got, you know, around 2000, Dr. Dre, you know what I'm saying? The work started with him. You know what I'm saying?
I got some questions about that. We're going to definitely get to the Dre thing, but I definitely wanted to take it back. Can you remember like your very first studio session in general? Like, do you remember that? Your first time recording a record, not battle rapper.
Recording a record. I had done demos.
Okay.
Because there was no mixtapes and shit when we were doing shit. There was, but it was more of an East Coast thing.
Okay.
Right? And out here in the West, it was like a scene. Like, you had to show up and like get down. You know what I'm saying?
Person.
Live. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It was like usually if a big act was coming, you got to open up for them. That was like money. You know, and then it was like the wake up show and all that stuff. So, what was it called?
The first studio session. Recording a record.
So to be honest, the very first thing I ever recorded was as far as a studio session was Paparazzi. The first time I went into the studio to record, it was that song.
You walked out with a hit. Your first studio session.
That was a hit,
bro.
Paparazzi.
You know that, right? That was crazy, man. Straight up, bro.
Yeah, I you know, and at the time, shout out to Theod. Theod was the dude who produced that record. But I wanted orchestra music, right?
What do you mean by that? Music? Like a lot of instrumentation?
Well, just, right. If you listen
you
to
played pop, instruments you, coming up?
What? Not really. Not really. Yeah. Right. I was niggas play for like a week and be like, yeah, I used to play the piano.
But orchestra, what's that mean? Like, I'm saying, like,
I want an orchestra music. Like that. If you listen to Paparazzi, there's a full orchestra behind it. And it's a sample of like this Barbra Streisand single.
Yeah.
Right? Barbra Streisand, like, opera singing record.
Yeah.
And so that was a backdrop during G-Funk when all these other, you know, the West Coast had a traditional sound.
Okay.
And so I wanted to be a little, you know, outside the lines a little bit, outside the mainstream, and try something different. Okay. And so that's how it cut through.
I think you'd make a hard ass rock and roll album.
Oh man, I got some rock songs.
I know you do. That's why I feel like songs. I think you'd make a cold ass album, bro. Yeah. No bullshit.
If you go listen to, I got a single called Napalm that it's a single off the album I released in 2012.
Yeah.
If you go listen to that, that's a song I did with the DJ from Slipknot.
That's crazy.
And Travis Barker on the drums.
And
it's called Napalm. And it was crazy, you know, to be able to hear myself in that. But I've done a lot of shows with like Linkin Park, Limp Bizkit,
right?
All these, my music was kind of already feeling that had that texture to it.
And to have been with them guys, you've had to have been in this shit a long time.
Absolutely.
To have done something with the name, them dudes is all legendary, man. Them groups are legendary.
Absolutely.
So to even say like, hey man, I've done shows with them, Not a lot of people get the opportunity to say that.
Yeah, and there was a bunch of tours that we did together too. Rock and hip, you know, rock and hip hop tours. Mm-hmm. You know, we used to go out together. The big festival tours, the big festivals in Europe. All that was like hand in hand because the genres was mixing at the time.
Blended line of rock stars and rappers.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
I want to ask you, and I like to ask a lot of artists, and I feel like you might have the most insight on it. Do you feel like you got more love in the States or overseas when you were doing tours and shows?
I think here in the States we're spoiled, right?
I thought it was the opposite, but
we're spoiled.
What do you mean by that?
That means that the artists that we like live here.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? Right. So you may see somebody, you know, out and about. You may be able to fly a state over and see a show and, you know, gauge whether you want to be there or not, you know?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But in Europe, they never see us until we get there. Like they follow us, they love our music, they love, you know, everything we are messaging, but to actually be there and see them live is like they couldn't see it nowhere else. So it's a different type of appreciation. So they really excited to see you and they get in, but they also like a certain type of hip hop. They like traditional like hip hop, like lyrics beat. You know what I'm saying? I dare say old school, but it's not old school. It's like they like a certain type of hip hop. So you know what I'm saying? Like
they don't like crossover records or the commercial stuff as much.
A lot of the stuff that's coming up now, but it's also different because they have their own local music now. Before there was, you know, the number one, you know, German artist was an American. But now, number one German artist, the German. Top 10, top 20 are all German.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying? Like it's not the same landscape. So they have their own taste in music now, which is different. But their favorites, they still with. You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
I'm sure you being one of them.
Oh, I could go tour Europe right now. I ain't put a record out since 2014, and I could still go tour right now.
Speaking of tours, you want to go ahead and do the Up and Smoke tour?
Yeah,
I want to ask you about that legendary tour. So many legendary artists was on it: Dr. Dre, Snoop Dogg, Eminem, iconic tour. We wanted to know what was your favorite moment from the tour, or favorite stop, and then we wanted to ask what was like the worst stop on the tour.
It was the favorite stop. You know, I mean, the favorite part of the tour was the whole tour.
Okay.
You know, being able to travel with those legends. And be, you know, part of history like that was magnificent. It ran like clockwork. Okay. And, you know, I that was from my experience. I'm pretty sure the production had their headaches and whatnot. But Dre's a perfectionist. So everything was status quo, you know. And, you know, as far as a favorite stop, I mean, again, like it wasn't a bad moment on that tour for me.
Perfect.
Everything was dope.
Yeah.
But the worst stop, the worst thing that happened on the tour is ironically, in Detroit.
Your hometown.
Correct.
Your birthplace, yeah.
There was a video that played before Snoop and Dre came out to start their set.
Okay.
And it was basically them, you know, getting into a shootout in a liquor store, dropping the weapons and walking out on stage in the same clothes that was on the video. It's seamless. It was awesome.
Yeah, that's hard.
And so Detroit had a problem with the video because there was some nudity in it. And they just had a moral issue with the video. But nobody else, I mean, it's a fucking Dr. Dre Snoop Dogg show. Have you heard these records? You know what I'm saying? Like,
hell, for real. Like,
and you know when we about to come out here and say this?
Yeah, so the shit, nigga, for real.
So they said that. So it became a pissing contest with the city officials that they said if you show the video, we're going to shut you down or we're going to arrest you or whatever. So long story short, they played a video. Show went out without a hitch. But just that headache of just people trying to, you know, come in and push their weight around. No,
they
we did it. Yeah.
They did it anyway. It didn't matter.
Yeah, it did not matter.
Take up with that shit afterwards.
Yeah, it was just a whole lot of, you know, come posturing and pissing contests
yeah.
in that particular place. But the show went off without a hitch. Everybody had a great time. And I think that was the only issue that happened on the tour. But that's documented. Okay. You know what I'm saying? Like, you can see that. But other than that, man, still, the city of Detroit came out. They loved it. Marshall tore it down. You know what I'm saying?
It wasn't nothing necessarily with the fan base. It was the city of Detroit. Mayors and shit like that talking about, hey, y'all ain't about to be showing this video.
Yeah. Pretty much, yeah. Okay.
What about the weed y'all was smoking on that tour? Like, was it?
It was the crack.
Mid, nigga. Probably mid. No, you knew a lot about it. You knew a lot about stress. Yeah. So I know you had a couple stress sticks through the mix.
Not at all, man. Not at all. That was amazing. That was, you know, a moment in history that I was very blessed to be a part of. And we had a good time.
What year was that? What, 2000,
2001? 2001. Yeah, 1999.
That was one of the most iconic. The Up and Smoke was one of the most iconic tours that ever happened.
Yeah.
Everybody and they mama wanted to go to that.
Will we ever get a part two or like a reunion tour?
Did that ever happen?
You guys get a raw guy.
Would you be up for going and doing something?
Right. What? Yeah. Like, what? Right now.
Yeah. Okay. I gotta know, man, for real. Did you ever receive any type of backlash or weird energy for not necessarily being an LA native?
Absolutely.
Okay. What was it like?
But you said, did I receive any?
Yeah, ever receive any like negativity or, you know, weird energy? Yeah, you know, only from when not being an LA native.
Yeah, only when I started winning.
For that real. Part. That's usually when that happens, right?
Yeah, when niggas felt I wasn't a threat, then everybody loves Exhibit. Okay. But when I started winning the game, it was just like, they start looking around like, how come we're not where he is?
Oh, okay. I blame it on
him. Yeah. Well, he ain't even from here. Like, so that makes it even worse.
Still West Coast.
You know what I'm saying?
I gotta bring it back to your podcast because I'm curious about that, you hopping in this space, because it's like a new nigga on the block. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So I got some questions about that, and I'm sure you
do. I want to point out. Yeah.
What's even made you jump over into this space, loved one?
Well, look, check
this
it out.
This is a rough A, homie. This is some rough shit on
me. I already know. But I've always stepped into things that are a challenge for me, right? And I've been looking at the way social media, and some things are not for me, right? Some, you know.
TikTok.
I don't have a TikTok. I do have one, but just I have my name.
Right, because your name's your name. Steve.
Yeah. I want to own it. You know what I'm saying? When the new platforms come out, I own it. But I felt like with the podcast that was – me controlling the narrative, right? Like, I love cannabis. I feel like it's the most informative way that people, you know, get their information and entertainment. Now it's a new platform. You know, remember, I was the first, you know, to do Pimp My Ride. You know, at the time, there was no reality TV that hip-hop wanted to be involved with. It was actually frowned upon. But at one point in time, Pepsi commercials were also frowned upon. But now, the will do a reality show with Pepsi in their hand. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So, you know what I'm saying? Right. Like with a tattoo of Oreo in their face because they want to get to the money. Yeah. But at one time, that wasn't looked at as being
exactly
down.
What you're talking about.
You know what I'm saying?
And now that's exactly the thing. So, would you say that you trailblazed the way for rappers that transition into media figures or television stars, like the Joe Buttons, the Norris, or any other rapper that?
I won't take credit for that, because in their own right, Joe Budden is definitely he did the same thing. Okay. He stepped out of what he was known for, or the box that people put him in, and made another way. The same way I stepped away and did film and TV.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Well, TV first, cable first, and then TV, and you know what I'm saying?
This shit,
and then
though, movies. You wanted some game on this, right?
Yeah.
This shit, once you step into this shit, it's hard to go back, baby.
Yeah.
They don't let you go back, because now you've opened the world up to a different side of you that's a talking point. They're not just going off your lyrics no more.
Right.
They're not going off the beat.
That's what happened.
They're going off of everything that you say, and everything that you say will be used, held accountable, all the shit, bro.
Yeah.
They're going to spin it. They're going to break it down.
Yeah.
You got to know that that's what's going to come with it. Not to mention, people are going to say a lot of nasty comments. People are going to do, which I'm sure you know, even being a famous rapper like yourself, you know you've dealt with your shit, but it's not as big as today.
Nah, skin is thick, baby.
You got to have tough
skin. It's different today right. because you can actually see it. People can comment. You know, you don't just hear it word of mouth. Like you used to, like, oh, you're hating, like, that shit don't mean nothing. Now the shit come to your front door.
I can't see Exhibit come to your front door. Deterred by some Instagram comments or some YouTube.
It's a grain of salt. You know what I'm saying? It's like I've been talked bad about for years, but you know it's what you pay attention to. Okay. There's three niggas that's gonna talk shit, but there's 50 people that fucking love me. Ooh. So why am I paying attention to the three niggas that don't like me? Yeah. Everybody ain't gonna like you. Yeah. Get over it. Get over yourself.
You know why I always watch them niggas? Yeah. I know they somewhere, somehow, praying and trying to plot on a nigga downfall.
I understood.
I always try to keep them niggas close. I mean, I don't want to know how you're doing. I want to see what you're doing.
So I have an answer for that, too. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Like, mm-hmm. when you engage with somebody, yeah. like my grandfather used to say, you know, you don't argue with a fool because from a distance you can't tell who's who.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So I don't engage with it. I hear it. And you know, I try to stay away from people who always come to me with gossip and all that other shit, because I don't want to feel no kind of way. If you got a problem with me, you're going to have to go out of your way to come get it to me.
Right.
And that's how me not engaging does that. It weeds them out. You got to come forward. Because if you get me to engage, get me to engage on this thing,
yeah.
and now we into something, even though you didn't have the balls to come say it to me in face to face, okay, you know, now I invited that energy. You know what I'm saying?
You hopping in this space, you know, the media space, and you know, coming to new media. What's your take of things and like some of the things that you see going on? Like, you see things right, you feel like, hey, this is an exciting space to hop in, or you feel like, hold on, somebody need to come in and pump the brakes on some of this shit. Some truth needs to be said.
I think it's the same way that everything else is fed to us. Yeah, like using food as an analogy. Mm. There's some fast food out there.
It's not another fast joke, neither.
No.
I should throw that out there.
I didn't say anything.
No, because D, my nigga, like, and he caught the person earlier, so now I was on alert for you. Like, hold on, we ain't about to just be going around.
That part.
I had your
it's
back,
all
bro.
Good. I appreciate it.
Really, I was like, hold on, dog. Like, that.
I wasn't even going there.
I haven't ate today, but go ahead. No, I'm feeling a bit under the weather.
You want me to post-made some shit? I got.
Oh, that's good. I have no appetite. I'm feeling like
that. Exhibit say, man, get you right, man.
No, that's but shit. I mean, you got fast food. You got, you know, mid-level restaurants. Then you got gourmet, right?
Yeah.
I think the podcast world, social media world is the same. There's something like TikTok is like McDonald's fast food. You know what I'm saying? Taco Bell. You know what I'm saying? Like, the podcast can be from, like, Sizzler all the way up to Ruth Chris. Mm. And then you got fine dining. You know what I'm saying? Like, the Mel Robbins podcast. Things, you know what I'm saying? Like, five-star.
Yeah,
things
five
that millions
star.
And millions and millions of engaging. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, five-star.
Like,
what are some of the podcasts that you watch on your personal time?
I do a lot of No Jumper. You know what I'm saying? I do a lot of...
Watch a lot of this controversy I'll be kicking on.
Yeah, man, I'll be like, what the... Yo, shout out to Adam, man. He a wild boy. You know what I'm saying? I fuck with Adam. Yo, the first time I met Adam, you know, he came to the interview dressed like Eminem, like makeup and everything.
Why? Halloween. Was it Halloween?
Yes. Okay, cool. All right, cool.
Cool.
Because when he walked in and it was the interview day, I said, is this nigga really... I was like, he can't be.
I was
pretty good. Yeah, no. Did you think he was on an
really,
episode of Pump?
He really likes Eminem. Either one, he really likes Marshall.
Yeah.
Then I was like, Halloween. Oh, he's Eminem. It's Exhibit. Okay, got it.
At first, did you think he was getting punked? Kind of like, oh, yeah, you got me on cameras. Where's the cameras at?
He had on like makeup and the hair, blonde hair and everything. I was like, what the fuck?
I want to find pictures. Let's pull up some pictures of that. I'm looking forward to find pictures of Adam dressed as Eminem.
No, but it was dope. It was dope. It was a dope interview. Yeah. He's a really cool guy. You know what I'm saying? And I'm glad to see the growth that he's doing. You know, but I do watch a lot of No Jumper. I listen to a lot of Dateline because I like the storytelling and I like the format that they have. It's just very cookie cutter, but you know, even though it's just a playback of the TV show, to hear it and hear the pauses and breaks and all that other thing is dope.
We're gonna get to the format, you know, and the reality of things. That's where it gets deep for you, because I want to know, you know, was there any time that you wanted to give up on this shit? Like, was there like even a split second
to give up on entertainment,
music, entertainment? Like, just
it's gonna be a normal person if just that's possible.
Because that's real. Just to be a normal person, it sounds like a heavy buy or a big ticket, a big purchase to do for somebody that's in the limelight these days.
Yeah, you know? I mean, like I've talked about this before, but right before the Napalm album, I had like a really bad 5-year depression.
Really?
Like, it was super bad. Like, I didn't get off the couch. I was like, I would wake up in the morning, I would put on a, I'd wake up, put on a robe, and I'd sit there and I'd drink.
Wow.
Right? And it was like a really bad time for me. That's when I was listening to people. I was, people talking about, you know, my issues, my personal issues, and this and that, and oppress, disrespect. You know, just thin skin. You know what I'm saying? Okay. Just everything was resonating. Everything was hidden.
Yeah.
And not that would happen, but I was also going through financial difficulties as well.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying?
Around that time.
So it was all kind of crashing down. And I just went through 5 years of nigga. I would get up, I would put on a robe, I would sit on a couch, and I would drink.
And by myself.
Crazy. And then I would go in the garage. I would open a garage, I'd smoke some joints, close the garage, go sit right back down, go to sleep on the couch, wake up on the couch. You know what I'm saying? Like, really bad, in a bad space. And I thought about quitting on everything. Then I realized that no one's coming to save you. Nobody gives a fuck if you're sad or not. Nobody gives a fuck about that shit. This is what they want. They want you to stop. And I did. About 5 years of just sitting down. Then I got up. Actually.
Spell, church.
Actually, this is exactly how it happened. Shout out to J.O. Felony.
Man, my nigga, man. Dago representative.
Right. J.O. Felony.
Mm-hmm.
He came to when I was doing a radio show at the time. Open Bar Radio. And I would just cut it out of my studio. That was like one of the only things I was doing. And J.O. came by, heard some of the music. I was just pushing play on some stuff while I was in there. And then he called me out of the blue and said, hey, I want you to come help me make some music. And then I was like, well, you know, I'm in a funk, man. I'm not going to the studio. He's like, no, you know, I want you to help me. And I was like, okay, cool. So he came to the studio, and I produced a whole record for him called James Savage. And James Savage is his real name.
Oh, okay.
And so I was like, well, let's do something different. Okay, people know J.O. Felony, but let's if I'm going to produce this, I want to do it and put it in a different light and tell your story.
So you produced that entire album
and
for him.
Yes, I did. And in producing that record, I found my light. I found my spark. I stepped out of being the artist and looked at the artist being built.
I didn't even know you had produced shit, church. So to hear like that you produce and then you did it for J.O. Felony, you know, he said that gang members, man. Like, really fucking with niggas that's really with that
and
shit.
And the album is smacking. If you get a chance, go listen to James Savage. It's on iTunes. It's everywhere. But listen to that James Savage album. And you'll understand that was a turning point for me. Like, there's video. We did a video for each song on a record and put together a little mini movie called Broken Ground, and that supports the album. And I'm telling you, that felt like it made me stand up.
That's good.
And then it made me start walking. And then after that, I started running. And then after that, I started sprinting. Hey. And then I was like brass knuckles.
After that, you start
and then it
flying.
Was like, oh shit, you know what I'm saying?
Niggas start flying.
And now I'm in a Rari, you know what I'm saying? Now I'm in Rude, you know what I'm saying? Now I got fucking chains, motherfucker.
Yeah,
and not even about money, I found peace.
That part.
And
you
I
found you again.
Yeah, and I was able to like rejuvenate. That's why it's like now, I hear people, man, and they don't have new material. It's the same material over and over again
because
they can't really say nothing else. You know what I'm saying? But I had to realize, like, they're going to say that all the time. They gonna perceive me how they want to perceive me. But then I started counting. I was like, let me look at the data. There's more people that love me than don't. You know what I'm saying? So why am I catering to the 1% out of my 100% that want to go out and seek out? You seek out negativity for some. We as people seek it out. Like, we looking for problems.
It's a sickness, right?
You know what I'm saying?
It's like cancer, bro.
It's like you can see 100. You can see 100 things that are positive,
but
in
that one
thing.
Negative comment. Go, I got to
You keeping it a band today, church.
Yeah. Fuck you. You suck, you son of a bitch. You clicking on a nigga. You're like, who is this nigga? Who is this?
Right, but you
let me see this nigga. Aw, nigga, that's why your page is there. Like, don't get into that.
But
don't
you won't respond to everybody who says something positive.
As you scroll right past it.
You scroll right past it. You're right.
Be like,
that.
You changed my life. You know what I'm saying? Like, yo, you gave me inspiration. You gave me hope. No, I'm dealing with the nigga who got the fuck you emoji. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah, that's backwards. You're right about that.
There's one thing that Bishop Don Magic Juan, shout out to him, man. That's my loved one. He used to always say, you know, accept the love, ignore the hate. So always, you know what I'm saying? Accept the love, ignore the hate, man. That was a quote from him, man. He used to always say around, like when you see motherfuckers getting into bush, hey, man, accept the love.
Yeah.
Take the love that you're getting, man. Ignore the hate, man. That shit all it do is put bad energy in.
Ignore the hate until they actually try something.
Yeah, and then it's time to go fucking crazy. You know what I'm saying?
Then you got to preserve your presence, and that's all it is.
I have an important question that we skipped over. I don't know how we skipped over this one. Where did the rap name Exhibit come from?
Ah, okay. So, Exhibit was, I started writing Exhibit. It started as Exhibit A.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you know what that means? When niggas go to court, we got Exhibit A. Here's the weapon, right?
Evidence.
Yeah,
oh, that's not straight up.
And my first name is Alvin, so the A came from that, right?
Okay. That's live.
So Exhibit A is how I started writing. And I spelled it with the E-X-H, you know what I'm saying? Yeah. Okay. And I would use that as my battle rap name. As when I got here, and I did that because at the time, everybody was MC this.
Right.
MC Hammer, MC Ren, MC 8, you know what I'm saying? Like, everybody was MC. And so I was like, I want to go to a different part of the spectrum. Like, I always wanted to stand out because that was the thing. How can you become, you know, how can you become your own? You know what I'm saying? Like, what can you do to be original? And that's how Exhibit A started. And then once I got to L.A. and I started, like, really, like, changing things up, and then the XZ came in, and then that's how I stuck with it. I've been writing Exhibit A since I was 13.
That's always been your name, whether it was a tag name, gang name.
Yeah.
You can't my name was going to be Exhibit A. How did Compton's very own King T, you know what I'm saying, as well as Alcoholics and, like, just Liquid Crew help change, like, you know, your overall rap career, like, help level you up?
They were the first ones that I seen do it, you know? So I was learning and grooming myself, they took me places. They put me in positions to win, you know, to be seen, to be on shows with them. Like, my very first video I was ever in was Damn from the Alcoholics, you know? And I did that one little part. I didn't even rap on it. You just did a little talking on there. But that was the first time I was, like, ever in a music video. A lot of my firsts come from King T and Alcoholics, you know? So I'll always be able to tell them, you know, be grateful to them that they gave me the opportunity to even be here. You know what I'm saying?
Do you think King T and Alcoholics get their just due?
No.
Especially with it being hip-hop's 50th anniversary?
No.
No? I feel like that overlooked them.
Yeah, 50th anniversary.
I don't think King T gets the same recognition that, you know, he deserves.
Right, as a Cube or Ice-T does.
Absolutely. He gets respect from us.
Right.
And, you know, and Biggie gave him a lot of love that he said King T was his favorite rapper. He even emulated some of his, you know, tones.
It's a lot of niggas,
you know,
that King T was a favorite rapper. They'll never admit that to
right.
you, bro.
He
they'll never
yo-yo
tell
on
you.
A few different people, King T.
They'll never tell you, bro, King T was one of their favorites. Bro.
Right.
We live in an era now you don't give niggas they flowers if you're trying to be big.
Right. It's weird. It's weird because King T is a pioneer of this shit, and so I'd like to see that happen. You know, even with the Alcoholics, we were one of the Alcoholics and myself were one of the only two West Coast acts that was, you know, nationally known, okay. internationally known. And, you know, they don't get the same kind of, you know, recognition that I believe they should get. But now, by no means are they not getting recognized. All right. But, you know, it should be in a different platform.
I see Ebro keeping their names alive a lot on the East Coast as Absolutely. Far as what he can do in his media space. Were you all on the same label?
Loud Records.
Yep. That's Steve Rifkin's label, correct?
Yeah.
What was it like being a part of that legendary label? Because that's Wu-Tang, Mobb Deep.
Yeah.
Matty C was an A&R there.
Yes,
correct?
Absolutely.
That's my journalistic Scott inspiration. Sign
yeah.
Hype.
Yeah. And
Matty C was your A&R. What was that label like? That Dude, building it was, everything.
It was incredible. Okay. And you don't realize you didn't realize that you were part of legendary shit.
Oh, at the time?
At the time. It was just like we was all
Because now time
excited.
Has passed and you start to see the bullshit that done got put out.
Yeah.
What people really, they get, I feel like medals are easily given these days.
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
easy to get
yeah.
in the rap game and get, you know, an E for effort.
Yeah,
you
yeah.
You know what I'm saying? There's no
the
struggle.
The participation trophy.
There's no struggle.
Yeah, that part.
For real though, X, that there's part. No struggle.
Yeah.
There's no story. Like, I used to always respect, like, VH1. I think they used to do, like, a storytellers or, like, the rock yeah, docs and yeah. shit, where people would walk you through, you know, what they were going through during this song that they're about to get ready to perform for you.
Right.
Hell, fucking Kanye West sat there dressed as Pee Wee Herman and fucking Rock sat there and just sat on the ground in Indian style and just told his entire story.
Whoa.
I miss shit like that.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? You don't really see that anymore. Like, what really made the music, that's what I felt like what really made fans.
Right.
Was to know what was really going on with the music, because that's how they got in tune with the artists.
Right.
I was going to say artist development. Was there, like, artist development at Loud Records? With
There was no artist development.
Oh, y'all
you motherfucker,
Ross?
You better come develop.
Oh, shit.
Straight the fuck
Let's go.
Up. Straight up.
Shout out to Steve Rifkin.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, there was no artist development budget.
No jumper. That's how it is up
no.
here. No jumper.
Yeah.
You better come fucking develop.
Yeah. I mean, it was a machine.
Okay.
And the artist development was looking at the success of the artists that were on the label and wanted to make your mark, wanting to hit the bell too.
Okay.
Right? And so, you know, you look at the success of Wu-Tang and, you know what I'm saying, and Big Pun, Fat Joe,
right.
You know what I'm saying? Like Funkmaster Flex had records that came out on Loud.
Yeah.
There was, you know, Mobb Deep, you know what I'm saying? There was Us. There was, you know, like, you name it. Cellar Dwellers,
That's
you know,
master.
Like it was a gang of talent on that label that made everybody want to work really hard to go forward. You know what I'm saying? Like everybody wanted to put points on the board,
okay.
And that's what made everybody get better.
Imagine
you know
a movie. Imagine a Loud Records movie.
Yeah.
Or TV crazy. Series, rather.
I definitely yeah. want to ask you, man, your third studio album, mm-hmm. Restless,
yep.
sold Classic. Over 200,000 in the first week and mm-hmm. was eventually certified platinum. What do you think the fans reacted to so well, like, to this particular album?
It was produced by Dr. Dre.
Okay. That was the first one.
That
was the first one he executive produced, right?
It's the first one.
Okay.
Yeah, that was we're fresh off the, you know, Up in Smoke tour.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You know, it was wild because Interscope, after all the work that we had done, you know, I would never sign an Interscope. You know, even though I was
that answers my question.
Yeah.
Go ahead, I'm sorry.
Yeah, and they tried to get me over there.
Okay.
You know? And Steve wouldn't let me go. You know what I'm saying? Shout out Steve Rifkin.
Yeah.
We've had this conversation. It's nothing new. Nothing controversial.
Oh, okay.
But.
So you and him have had this personal conversation.
Absolutely.
Already.
So he didn't let me go. But the friendship and the things that I was able to accomplish in Dre's camp.
Okay.
He was very grateful for that. You know what I'm saying? Like, we developed a friendship beyond just making music. Right. Like,
okay.
And so. He I am the only artist that he was able to come across the street, so to speak, and produce for.
Even though you weren't technically signed to Aftermath. So my question was, why did you never technically sign to Aftermath?
I know you've been waiting.
Right.
Yeah, it's been a...
Listen,
yeah.
I went back and forth with this man. I said, Church, we really want to dive in.
Absolutely.
Said, I want to know.
I'm that type of person. I really want to know.
Not trust me.
What happened? What was
but
the
you
disconnect?
Said that it was something with you and Steve Rifkin. That's why
yes.
you never really...
Yes,
okay.
yes. They tried.
They best? Okay.
They tried. But it just didn't work out. And so, you know, he still wanted to do music with me. So we worked it out so that, you know, Dr. Dre, as far as I know, is the outside of his own labels and stuff. I'm the only one that has music produced out that.
I'm trying to think. I think you are. But so you're still, like, technically his artist. You just weren't signed to Aftermath, but he was your executive producer.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah. And so that speaks volumes.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, now, do I think that if I was able to go over to Aftermath, would things have been different?
Yeah.
I believe so.
How so?
Because, you know, it's one thing to come across the street and work with me there, but he's working with me.
Okay.
Over there, the machine is there. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Jimmy Iovine is there. Yeah. The decision making, the marketing,
you
say, the powerhouse.
It's me and him in the studio just over there.
Yeah,
like, man,
over
really
here, it's just music. And, you know, I'm on the label. You got to, where's the marketing and the attention to detail and all that stuff, all the magic that happens behind the scenes has to come from the machine that you're in.
Okay. I'm still interested in, like, you producing.
Yeah.
Like, I like that. Like, that you,
dude,
you,
I love
you stepped
music.
Over to, like, a whole different side, and for you to find yourself back in that, like, at a very low time, has to speak volumes within itself.
I actually like producing for other people more than I like making
music.
My own music.
Yeah.
You know, I can still do it. It sharpens me.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I'm able to hear different things, and I like, you know, the performance of certain things, and I know I have a certain level that I like to push things to.
You know
to.
What it really is, right?
Yeah.
Let me tell you what you really love about it.
What's that?
Can I be like your crystal ball?
Yeah.
It's because you found yourself back in through that.
Yes.
Through producing.
Yep.
You were at a fucked up time in your life.
Yeah.
Drinking, robe, couch, couple joints, garage clothes, back to the couch, sleep.
Xbox.
and wake back.
Some gaming.
You forgot to leave your
some
Xbox.
Gaming, okay.
You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah.
So for you to find yourself back through production and, you know, doing it not for you, but for someone else, it was a chance for you to help someone else.
Yeah.
Life had purpose again.
Yes, and that's exactly it. Yeah, you're absolutely correct.
Life had purpose again, man.
Yep.
So a year before Restless, you did, I want to say, maybe two features on Chronic 2001?
Yes.
More, what's the difference in the Lolo record?
Mm-hmm.
How did those sessions go? Did you get
dope.
The call, like pull up to the session, studio? What happened?
Dope. You get the call. You show up. You hear what's going on. All the bullshit is out the window. You in there to
it's
fucking
work time.
You in there to grind.
It's not like that no more. Everybody got controversies. Well, I'm not coming over there because I don't fuck with such and such and all the extra shit. When an album like that's being put together to that magnitude, you shut the fuck up. You hop in the car and you ride.
Yeah, you just want to learn as much as possible when you in that environment. Working with Dr. Dre is like, you know, it's Olympic status. You know what I'm saying?
But it's too many egos today.
Yeah.
That's why those kind of projects don't go down anymore.
Real quick,
you know?
Also, Dr. Dre is known for moving at a glacial pace when it comes to putting out music. So even when we're talking about you signing with Aftermath, you're saying you might have had that push from Interscope, but do you think it ever would have came to a point where it would have started taking you longer to put out albums if you was Dr. Dre's official artist? Because I know he likes to take his time when putting out music.
He
don't drop back-to-back-to-back like that.
No, but I mean, you have to look at, you know, Eminem never had a problem putting out music. You know what I'm saying? It's like, I think if you put the work in and actually show up with not just, you know, the first 10 things and expect him to like all 10 things.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? I think it's the work ethic you have.
Okay.
You know, can you present enough music for him to feel like you have something?
Okay.
You know, and once you have something, then you build off that. You know, we turn records into songs and turn songs into hits. Okay. You know?
You know, man, I'm going to be real with you. Like, I grew up watching you. You know what I'm saying? Like, I just want to know, like, through all the years, because I never knew none of the hardships that you went through, like, some of the, you know what I'm saying, things that may have tried to veer you off. Like, what's kept you going?
Just not having a plan B. You know what I'm saying? I've learned a lot.
Explain, elaborate that a little bit, not having a plan B.
First of all, I never gave up. I could sit down, I can lay down, I can get tired. But I can also get back up and go. And what I learned is that it's harder to get back up than it is just to just keep moving. The difference a day makes, you know? And so what keeps me going is my family, realizing that I had to prioritize my time.
Somehow you never said friends. You just kept going. He's like, my family.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. Like as people say, you know, my friends.
In my circle, we either family or nothing at all.
Right. Like, I like how you kept the friends, but like, I was waiting for it to come second or third. You didn't. You just kept going. I ain't mean to interrupt, but you just, I liked how you didn't do that. Like, my friends.
No.
Because who the fuck's your friends?
No, I'm too old to have friends. I got family.
You family know what I'm or nothing. Okay.
Yeah.
See, I'm too old to have mistresses. I'm too old to have friends. Straight up, nigga. Nigga, get to that point. Sharp. Right?
We got
nigga
family. Gotta have, like, we got family. Yeah, I got to have people I can trust because I have too much to lose.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Yeah. So I had to be cautious about having acquaintances. You know, not everybody's happy for you. They may celebrate with you, but they not necessarily happy for you. And, you know, and I'm okay with that. But what keeps me going is just purely never turning around. Always go forward. You're going to run into things. It's always going to be like this until you learn how to fucking let go of the things that are weighing you down and keeping you unbalanced and be good with it. You know what I'm saying? We always carry things with us that, you know, our biggest obstacles are in our own head. You know what I'm saying? There's things that we could change overnight and our life would be totally different.
It's going to get clipped and put on Spiritual World. Watch. He's going to be one of them
names. Yeah, we on Black Twitter. We on Black Twitter.
They're going to have the words. Yeah, they're going to remember you saying that. Like, watch. You're going to see a cold clip of you. Yeah, man. For real.
But it's the truth.
It's the truth. Giving some game up, bro. For real.
And that's just what I've been exposed to. That's my experience. That's the way I've been through it. And that's the way I survived it. You know what I'm saying? Like, I tell you in a heartbeat, you know, I'm a very private person. Like, I don't go on the internet and fucking spill my guts and, you know what I'm saying? And be all, you know, get all emotional and shit like that.
Another clip.
You know what I'm saying? No. No.
It's another clip. No. Straight
no.
Up.
I mean, you know, I usually internalize a lot of shit. I don't know if you guys are like that either, but I don't talk about.
I
would rather help somebody than fucking talk about my own bullshit.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? And so after so many years of that, you know, I felt like I had a physical reaction to it. You know what I'm saying?
And it caught up with you.
Right, it caught up with
you. You got
internalizing all that stuff.
To right. Helping people now.
Right.
Because we all got an addiction. Right?
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It's just where do you veer your addiction off to?
Yeah.
Is it into a negative standpoint and to where it fucks up life and fucks up everything that's going on around you? Or is it into a positive life where it actually not only helps you but helps others?
Yeah, I got a line on my album. It's on the song called Been a Long Time Part 2. Mm-hmm. And it says, I learned how to turn a negative to positive and turn the positive into accomplishment. Exhibit. Mm. Yeah.
That's another bar.
Oh, that's cold right there, man. Yeah. For real.
Like, I have a random question. It's like a true or false type of question. Were you ever signed to Mac 10's Who Banging?
We had discussed it.
Because they popped up on my...
We had discussed it.
Okay, so I don't know why
We had discussed it.
All right.
You know what I'm saying? And we was getting ready to go there, and then it just didn't go there.
What time frame was this that you guys were having these conversations?
It was a while. It was a while ago.
Okay.
But it was. I mean, it was short lived. It was like I think it was like when I was just trying to get back into it.
Okay.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. I remember he said that he was going to sign Snoop Dogg when he left Death Row. I guess he had to deal with Priority,
right?
And so he was trying to get Snoop. And I always looked at. I just looked up your name and it came Who Banger ring. I was like, he never was on Who Banger.
We did talk about it though.
Okay, it did. Okay. Yep. So it was rumors of it. That's how I got online.
Okay. How was it for you, man? Being close and like working close to Dre, because not a lot of people get to even say they've had that experience, right? You know what I'm saying? To even work with somebody like him, because he's considered one of the goats, the greats of even putting shit into production.
Right.
Maybe that's why you went and found your purpose through it. You know what I'm saying?
I feel like I was a fan of Dr. Dre and his music before I even met the man.
Okay.
So I was able to have that experience. I know what the magic sound like coming out of the speakers. So then when I was able to actually meet him, work with him, now I know what it sound like before you behind the speakers.
Before it's done. Okay.
You know what I'm saying? I got the full spectrum. I got the full experience, you know, organically. And I was able to kind of put it all together. I remember what it sounded like when I heard it the first time. So I was now putting it together. Oh, so that's how the vocals got like that. That's how it sounded like that. That's how that high hi-hat sounded. That's how that synth fit right in the mix. That's how it sounds so big. You know what I'm saying? Coming out the speaker, like you could put two and two together. And it was a learning experience, especially the writing of it, the writing of the music along with the music and which comes first and how you put it together. And like the chorus may come first and then the verses come and then sometimes it's vice versa or a bridge or maybe it's just one word that turns into a whole different song. It's crazy to be able to kind of soak all of that in and now have that and carry that with you in your creative process.
Well, I want to take this time to ask you, like, were there any co-producers in your guys' studio sessions? Were there any other producers helping out with the records? If so.
That was above my pay grade. I was just there to write some raps. You know what I'm saying? But I was witness to everything,
I got to know this one, man, because this one's, like, just on my mind for the parallel with working in music and working on a podcast. Do you have a team or do you oversee everything?
No, I got a team.
Yeah.
I got a team. I mean, you can't do this kind of the magnitude of things that we're trying to do with one or two people.
Here, brother. We just trying to see.
Yeah, yeah.
Where is that for you? Like, are you trying to take these new reins on as Exhibit got this, or I don't mind having like a team with
you? No, I got a really dope team. Yeah. I got a really dope team. They're called DCP. And you know, we produce everything in the studio. We have our own setup. It's ran. Everything is out of New York and L.A. And we got a dope team. I mean, they really know what they're doing. And it feels good to be able to get with people who understand
you
the vision.
You ready for this? I'm not talking to Exhibit the rapper right now. We're talking to Exhibit the podcaster.
Yeah.
Like, so this is different.
Yeah. I'm ready.
You know, like, okay, you want to come over here and level out.
Yeah, yeah.
I understand it.
Though I did my homework. I know what I'm prepared to do.
But if you can do movies and you can do television and
I can do it all.
These things, you can do it all. You're just an entertainer.
Yeah.
So you've done, listen, Exhibit, you have done a lot.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? In the culture, just overall. Podcasting, do you feel like this might be the one that you know I might have bit off a little bit more than I can chew, or even if you see the rough roads, you're gonna go still past the movement? Well, shit's rough,
no, I understand. I think that's why I have the co-host there, somebody I feel that can carry the weight. Just like you know, just like Adam isn't here every day. You know what I'm saying? Like he has you guys that were able to branch off into shows and to do other things and carry and now we're looking at network. Yeah. Type movement. Now we're looking at things that are being programmed. Now we're programming our own network. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. And that's what Adam is building here. You guys do it show by show. You guys are really close to it.
Yeah.
But for me,
doing Shark Tank 2 years.
Correct.
2 years.
Correct.
I think you're gonna be my 100th episode.
Hey, there it is.
That's fine.
Congratulations. But just to let you guys know. You know, like part of doing my homework is looking at the growth of No Jumper.
Yeah.
And how, where it started. You know, I'm talking about the store on Melrose. You know what I'm saying? Where they do the podcast in the back room.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Like, and now to see where it is now, like this is how, you know, the things that are huge now, we're talking about like fucking Fox and fucking, you know what I'm saying? Like,
Adam started
like HBO, you know what I'm saying? Like
Adam
shit like that.
2015, in the back of a store, a bike store, I want to say.
That's where I did my first interview for No Jumper.
Yeah.
In the back of that store.
In the back of that store.
Now look where we're at. Yeah.
Exactly.
Took you on a whole motherfucking tour.
Exactly.
Took you on a whole tour this
shit. Yeah, and this is not the first facility. That this is growth.
Yeah.
So just being really close to it, you guys are doing it show by show, but from back here in the seats that I'm at, I see this, you know, being maintained and to grow into something.
Sure.
Especially, it is exactly what this the attention that people are doing now. You guys are the forefront of that.
Okay. I thought about it like this really is my 100th episode, man, and like I don't even look at it as it's just a milestone to just let's just keep going.
Yeah,
you know what I'm saying? No balloons, no cake. You know, what I'm saying? No, none of that, man. Just real conversation.
Yeah.
And overall,
well, there's a bottle there.
Yeah.
Look, real conversation. Celebration. Overall, real people, man. Yeah. Like, when I got in this shit, like, it just gets moving. Like, you can't never do it thinking that you're making it. You owe the fans and the viewers so much more.
Mm.
So much more than marking a fucking milestone. market when you're damn near dying.
Correct.
That's when you start to celebrate it. Yeah. It'll feel so much better then when you celebrate it at the end of the time of it versus during it.
Yeah, it's so much about the journey. You know,
I want to see your journey in this, man. Yeah. Like, you know, just doing lasagna ganja. Like, and what I'm excited to see what this podcast produced.
And plus, I mean, you got to look. You know, with Be Real, B Real does Be Real TV every day.
Single day.
And he's in Cypress Hill.
You know,
so it's not like, you know.
DeJounte looks at you like, okay, this Exhibit the Rapper. You podcasting now? Oh, nigga, you one of us. Nigga,
What's up?
It ain't no more, hey, Exhibit, we love you as a rapper.
Oh, now you're a competition?
This podcasting.
I'm going to definitely be tapping in with the podcast.
It's all
can't
good,
wait
man. I appreciate it.
Speaking of Be Real, because you brought up Be Real real quick, I want to ask about the Serial Killers.
Yes.
And those mixtapes that you guys put out. It was like a solo mixtapes. How did that group form? Was it your idea? Whose idea?
Be Real had the idea.
Okay.
It was originally supposed to be him and two other people. And he had shelved it, and then he brought the idea later on when we were in the studio together, me, Demrick, and B. And he asked me if I would. The first song we did together was Don't You Dare Laugh. Okay. And he was like, hey, man, what do you think about doing this group? And I've always wanted to be in a group, right? But it just never came to fruition. Okay. Never. It always fell apart. I was like, fuck.
Is that because, I don't mean to interrupt you, but is that because you felt like you're a better team player than you are just the solo act? You
or is
know
it from
saying?
The Alcoholics
like,
wanting to be a member at MC?
It just never worked out.
Okay, I'll leave it at that. It just never worked out.
Okay. And so this is the first group that I was actually in that, you know, is still, you know, because we all got different things. I think if the stress of being a group and staying together as a group is a thing, then we don't have that thing because we all solo artists in the beginning. So when we come together, it's a whole different vibe. And, you know, he's already in a group. And so now being in a group is a whole different thing. And now it works. Yeah.
Gotta ask you, man. You know what I'm saying? What caused, like, your transition from hardcore, you know what I'm saying, hardcore gangster rapper to television personnel, you know, just like being on television, you know, doing shit on MTV. Doesn't even matter what it was. I don't give a fuck if Exhibit just stood there, just, hey, I'm Exhibit. You know, just doing just different shit, man. Like, what made you even want
to?
The opportunity knocked.
That was dope. 8 Mile for sure.
Guys, the opportunity knocked.
And you was up for the task.
Yo.
It's a mission for you. Everything in life's a mission for you.
The best things, in life on the other side of fear. The best things in life are on the other side of fear, bro. So nobody wanted to do reality shows at the time. Why not? Let's try it. You know what I'm saying? If it's in your wheelhouse, if you feel like you have the confidence, even if you're not sure about it, why not try it? Every opportunity, as long as it's not putting you in detriment or your gut feeling tells you not to do it, try. Okay. You know what I'm saying? Just even if you fail.
Yeah.
I think that's what it is. People want to be seen like everything I do works.
So you saying, Church, you dared to be different a long time ago.
Correct.
Like, niggas can act like they doing some new shit now, but you did. Y'all just catching up to what I was already on long time ago. That y'all said was goofy, now everybody into it.
Yeah, people wanted to hold on to their image like they would die if they let it go. So for me, man, it was just like, well, I am defining my path. You know what I'm saying? I'm not gonna sit in some box just because people say I can't or I shouldn't or they wouldn't do it.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Well, let me go try it. You know what I'm saying? I actually did Pimp My Ride because I thought they was gonna play my music videos. You know what I'm saying?
Damn, he was on some other shit. We like, nigga, I'm looking at a bigger picture. Yeah. I was like,
oh shit.
Play my shit.
Yeah, okay, cool. Like MTV, I'll be on there, you know what I'm saying? But it turned into something else. So, again, like, and then being on that show turned into something else, you know what I mean? And you never know, man, until you put yourself in that position.
Triple X. Yeah. Who gets into action films?
Yeah, yeah.
Like,
with Ice Cube.
Like, getting into that fucking action
with Ice Cube. And then working with The Rock, you know?
Who does this?
You know, working with Clive Owen, Jennifer Aniston.
You don't get enough flowers, bro. You don't get enough flowers in, like, the rooms you done been
in. The Wash, 3 years on Empire. Like, these are things that I'm doing along with being
Grit. Yeah, battle rapped on 8 Mile.
Yeah.
So they can't never say, like, you wasn't in battle rap. That was really a moat. You tried to make.
I was mad when they
wrote that.
Empire.
Did you write that yourself?
I did.
That shit was crazy. Y'all just in the yard. My nigga got the work.
They had stuff written for us. Yeah. And
he
then,
said, nah.
I'm not doing that.
I was whack.
He said, that's not going to be that. Real. It's not because it's not going to make it real. Like,
no.
This is how I'm feeling. So I'm going to show y'all how I was feeling if I was to step on this yard and I'm really working.
And I did it like that for a reason. You would be amazed. You know, like it's a movie, right? Yeah. And so people are in my, you know, comments like, hey, why did you let Eminem beat you in that rap?
But I'm
like,
why would they say something?
What the fuck are you talking about?
Yeah. That is some goofy ass
shit.
That's
one of the negative comments you got to respond to.
Like, nigga, well, first of all, it's his movie.
Yeah.
Like, niggas is crazy, bro.
Nigga, it's his movie. It's his character. Hey, it would be
People don't know how to separate what they
feel.
That's
the scary part.
What they feel from what's real. You know what I'm saying? Like, they don't know. Yeah. Like, come on, church. The real is, this ain't my fucking movie. It's a movie y'all watching.
It's a fucking movie.
Which is iconic. It's a classic movie, bro.
It's still a movie.
It's crazy because, like, you've been in timeless movies.
Oh, that's dope, man.
Timeless movies. Like, even from XXX. Like, people always know that will always be somewhere. People will know that. Like, just 8 Mile. People will always know that.
Yeah.
So that's real shit, man. Fuck with you. Yeah. We love you.
Man.
We appreciate everything that you come down
respect.
Thank you.
Just the respect overall. Yeah. You got any more questions you want
to
ask?
I wanted to close out really, really quick with a couple rounds of West.
Okay.
Let's do it.
E40, I'm going to ask you like this or that.
Okay. Rapid fire.
E40 or Too Short?
E40. And I love Too Short. E40.
It's not personal.
Hey, Mac Dre or Keek the Sneak?
Keek the Sneak.
Ooh.
Cube or Snoop Dogg?
Ooh. Can I take a drink or something real quick? Can I take a hit or something?
That's both?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Ice Cube or Snoop? A show in Oakland or San Francisco?
Oakland.
Okay.
Girl.
YG or Tiger?
YG.
I got one for you. Dr. Dre or DJ Quick?
Dr. Dre.
I
love DJ Quick. Yeah. Yo, come on, Quick. But he say Dr.
Like
Dre too.
This is my favorite one.
Like
West Side Connection or the East Siders?
Ooh.
That's a hard one.
I think it'll pump.
That's crazy. Ooh. This next one is tough. It's some tough ones. We're going to wrap it up with some tough questions.
Right. I want to know the Chronic or Doggy Style?
The Chronic. Because without the Chronic, there wouldn't be no Doggy Style.
Okay.
Boys in the Hood or Menace to Society?
Menace to Society. I wish there was a buzzer.
That's your opinion, but yeah, it's tough. It's tough.
Another one for you. Friday or next
Friday?
Well,
let me answer that. Boys in the Hood was a good story, but Menace to Society felt real.
It
was more. It was like watching a documentary.
Oh,
you know what I'm saying?
It was more accurate.
Yeah, it's more accurate.
Okay.
Well, no, Boys in the Hood was accurate as fuck too. But it was a good story, the good transition. It caught a moment. Just like both movies caught a moment, but Menace to Society felt a little more raw. It felt like,
like that's what kind of pushed Lorenz Tate's career. Why did he go places that nobody else went? Lorenz Tate went crazy that movie.
Yeah,
man.
Yeah, it was dope. It was dope. The Hughes brothers, crazy.
Friday or next Friday?
Friday.
Friday after next or The Wash?
He was in The Wash.
Friday after next.
He was mad about some CDs or some mixtapes or something?
Yeah, Friday after next.
Okay, this is the last question. This is the last question that we have, a very important question. Respect in the streets or success in the music industry?
Respect in the streets or success in the music industry? Yeah. Success in the music industry.
Okay.
He said, fuck
that.
Leave that. Hey, that was real. Like, hey, because I think maybe 20 years ago, you might not have said that.
No, because it takes growth.
Let me tell you why. Because respect in the streets, I don't know, as long as you're in the streets. But if you're trying to be an entertainer or somebody that is trying to feed your family, do entertainment, you got to be in the industry. Mm-hmm. You know, there's rarely room for both. You know what I'm saying? No matter how big you, once you get to a certain level, you start understanding that, you know, you can be there and you can lose it too.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? You can also lose it. You can also drop the ball. So when I say success in the industry mean that, you know, if you conducting yourself and you coming home alive and you feeding your family and everything is moving to a place where, you know, you are providing for people, you are success, you having the life that you imagine and thought of, because the streets will love you till you're gone and then they won't even talk about you a week later. You know what I'm saying? Like, respect is short-lived, you know, unless you're there to receive it. You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
Yeah, but if you successful, you take care of people, now people love you. It goes back to that thing we was talking about. You know, I don't got friends. I got family.
Family.
Right.
You know? And that's what it is.
I'll tell you this. You family to us, man.
Yeah.
We hope that. So we can sit down and do this shit
again. Lasagna Ganja podcast.
Hey, I would love to come over to Lasagna Ganja podcast. And if y'all haven't, man, make sure y'all go tune in, man, because I know it's some heat on the way, and I know he about to drop some real shit.
Oh, man,
shit.
I got some music for your ass.
Hey, we already know. Hey, man, the truth need no support. The Sharp Tank.
Yeah.
No jumper. Sharpest, coolest podcast in the motherfucking world, man. Got my co-host, man, Dijon Paul. Y'all know what it is. Hey, Mikey, shoot us out the motherfucking gym.